Picture this. You work as a security guard for a large bank. Your manager asks you to find every weakness in the building before a thief does. You have two choices about how to do this job. The first choice is to sit in a parked car across the street. You watch the building through binoculars. You notice which doors staff leave propped open. You see that the delivery entrance has no camera. You learn the routines of the guards. You find out a lot, and nobody inside the building knows you are watching. The second choice is to walk up to the building yourself. You try every door handle. You test every window lock. You knock on the walls to find hollow spaces. You learn even more this way. But now people inside can see you working, and some of your testing might accidentally break something fragile. These two choices perfectly describe the two main methods used in cybersecurity to find weaknesses in computer systems. The first method is called passive scanning. The second is called active scanning. Together, they form the heart of what security professionals call a vulnerability assessment. A vulnerability assessment is simply the process of finding, measuring, and ranking the weaknesses in a computer system before an attacker finds them first. This lesson will teach you both methods in depth. You will understand how each one works, when to use each one, and why the most skilled security teams use both together. You will also learn how all of this work is written up into a professional report that helps the right people make smart decisions. Let us begin. The first thing to understand is what a vulnerability actually is. In cybersecurity, a vulnerability is a weakness or flaw in a computer system, a program, or a network that an attacker could use to cause harm. Think of it like a cracked lock on a door. The door still opens and closes normally, so the occupant might not even notice the crack. But a skilled burglar walking past would spot it immediately and know the door could be forced open. Vulnerabilities work the same way. A system can appear to be working perfectly while hiding flaws that a clever attacker could exploit. The word exploit here means to take advantage of a weakness to cause damage or gain unauthorized access. The goal of a vulnerability assessment is to find those cracked locks before the burglar does. Now let us look at the two main tools for doing that job. Passive scanning is the art of listening. Imagine being a doctor sitting quietly in a hospital ward, observing patients without touching any of them. You notice one patient is breathing irregularly, another keeps rubbing his left arm, a third has a slight yellow color to her skin. You have gathered a lot of useful information without giving a single injection or running a single test. Passive scanning works the same way. In a computer network, information travels around constantly. When you visit a website, your computer sends small packages of data called packets across the network and receives packets back. When your phone connects to the office Wi-Fi, it announces itself. When a server updates its software, that activity creates a record. A passive scanner sits quietly on the network and watches all of this traffic flow by, just like our doctor in the ward. It records what it sees, looks for signs of weakness, and raises an alarm if it spots something concerning. A tool called Wireshark is a very common example of a passive scanning tool. Think of Wireshark as a very patient and very detailed note taker. It captures every packet of data moving across a network and lets a security analyst read those packets like reading a book. By studying those packets, an analyst can discover what computers are on the network, what software they are running, and whether any sensitive information is being sent without protection. There is another important passive technique called open source intelligence, which professionals shorten to OSINT. The word intelligence here means gathered information, not cleverness. Open source means the information is already publicly available to anyone who knows where to look. OSINT involves collecting information about an organization from public sources. These sources include company websites, social media profiles, job advertisements, public domain registration records, and even databases of previously leaked passwords. A job advertisement that says we are hiring a developer with experience in Apache Tomcat version 9 is a gift to an attacker, because it tells them exactly which software the company uses and they can then search for known weaknesses in that specific version. A passive scanner doing OSINT work finds all of this without touching the company's systems at all. There is also a third passive technique called configuration and log review. A log is a record that a computer system automatically keeps of everything that happens to it, like a diary. A configuration file is a document that tells a piece of software how to behave. Reviewing these files passively means reading them carefully to look for mistakes, without changing anything. For example, a security analyst might review a firewall's configuration file and discover that the rules allow traffic from a country where the company has no business partners. That is a potential weakness discovered without sending a single probing packet anywhere. The greatest strength of passive scanning is that it is completely silent. It generates no unusual traffic. It leaves no trace. It is nearly invisible to the security monitoring tools that would normally detect an attack. This invisibility makes it especially valuable in environments where disrupting systems would be catastrophic. Consider a hospital with MRI machines, infusion pumps, and patient monitoring devices. These are sensitive, life-critical machines. Sending probing packets at them, as active scanning would do, could potentially cause them to crash or behave erratically. The consequences could be deadly. In this environment, passive scanning is not just preferable. It is the only responsible choice. A real example makes this concrete. A hospital security team wants to check whether its network of medical devices has any dangerous weaknesses. They deploy a passive scanner. The scanner listens to the network traffic for several days. It notices that a specific brand of infusion pump, which is a device that delivers precise doses of medicine directly into a patient's bloodstream, is communicating using a very old protocol called Telnet. A protocol is simply a set of rules for how two computers talk to each other. Telnet is dangerous because it sends all data in plain text, meaning anyone who can intercept the communication can read every command being sent to the pump. The passive scanner flags this as a serious risk. The security team can now alert the hospital management, and a plan can be made to replace Telnet with a secure alternative. The pump was never touched, never disrupted, and no patient was ever put at risk during the assessment. However, passive scanning has real limitations, and being honest about them is important. The biggest limitation is that a passive scanner cannot confirm whether a weakness it has found can actually be used by an attacker. Discovering that a device uses Telnet is worrying, but a passive scanner cannot tell you whether the Telnet service is protected by other controls, such as a network firewall that blocks outside access to that port. There might be a cracked lock on the door, but the door might also be behind a thick steel gate that the passive scanner never noticed. This can lead to what security professionals call false positives. A false positive is an alarm that warns of a danger that does not actually exist in a harmful way. It can also lead to false negatives, which are missed dangers. If a vulnerable service is running but is not currently sending any network traffic at the moment the scanner is watching, the passive scanner will simply not see it. It is like our doctor in the ward missing a sick patient because that patient happened to be sleeping quietly and showing no visible symptoms during the observation period. This is where active scanning comes in. Active scanning is the art of probing. Instead of watching and listening, it reaches out and touches. It sends specially crafted signals to computer systems and studies how those systems respond. Different systems and different vulnerabilities produce different responses. By carefully analyzing those responses, an active scanner can identify weaknesses with much greater precision. Think of active scanning like the same doctor, but now in an examination room with a patient in front of them. The doctor taps the patient's knee with a small hammer to test reflexes. They press on the abdomen to check for tenderness. They shine a light in the patient's eyes to see how the pupils respond. Each test produces a specific, measurable response that tells the doctor something concrete about the patient's health. Active scanning does the same thing to computer systems. One of the most fundamental active scanning techniques is called port scanning. To understand this, think of a large building again. The building is a computer, and the doors of the building are called ports. Each port is a numbered gateway through which a specific type of communication enters and leaves the computer. Port 80, for example, is the standard door for regular web traffic. Port 443 is the door for encrypted web traffic. Port 3306 is typically the door for a database program. A port scanner knocks on every one of these doors and notes which ones are open, which are closed, and which are locked but still there. A very well-known port scanning tool is called Nmap. Security professionals around the world use Nmap routinely to build a complete picture of which services a target system is offering to the world. Beyond simply knowing which doors are open, active scanners also probe those open doors to find out exactly what is behind them. They do this by comparing what they find against enormous databases of known vulnerabilities. The most important of these databases is called the Common Vulnerabilities and Exposures List, shortened to CVE. Think of the CVE list as a global encyclopedia of every known flaw in every piece of software maintained by cybersecurity organizations worldwide. Each entry in the list has a unique identifier, like CVE 2017-5638. That particular entry describes a devastating flaw in a popular software framework called Apache Struts, and it was the vulnerability that criminals used to steal the personal data of 147 million Americans from the credit reporting company Equifax in 2017. When an active scanner probes a system and discovers it is running Apache Struts version 2.3.5, it immediately checks the CVE list and says, in effect, this version of this software has a known critical flaw. Here is the reference number. Here is how serious it is. This is far more actionable information than a passive scanner could provide. There is an important distinction with an active scanning that professionals call the difference between credentialed and uncredentialed scans. A credential is simply a username and password or another form of permission that lets you log into a system. An uncredentialed scan, also called a black box scan, approaches the system from the outside with no special access. It tests what a complete stranger, an outside attacker with no inside knowledge, would be able to discover and exploit. This is valuable because it reflects the perspective of the most common type of attacker. A credentialed scan, also called a white box scan, is given a login account on the system being tested. This allows the scanner to log in and examine the system from the inside. It can check exactly which patches have been applied and which are missing. It can read configuration files directly. It can examine every piece of installed software and compare each version against the CVE database. Credentialed scans are dramatically more thorough and accurate. They find far more real vulnerabilities and produce far fewer false positives. The trade-off is that you must trust the scanning tool with login credentials, which introduces its own security considerations. A real-world example helps here. A financial services company processes credit card payments. Rules called the Payment Card Industry Data Security Standard, shortened to PCI DSS, require them to regularly scan their systems for vulnerabilities. They schedule a quarterly credentialed active scan using a professional scanning platform called Nessus. The scanner logs into their web servers, their databases, and their payment processing machines. It finds that three servers are running a version of Apache Struts that has not been patched since early 2017. The reference number CVD 2017-5638 appears in the report, highlighted in red. The report tells the IT team exactly which patch they need to apply. They apply it the next morning. A vulnerability that could have cost them hundreds of millions of dollars was found and fixed before any attacker could use it. The great strength of active scanning is its certainty and depth. It does not guess. It does not infer from passing traffic. It directly tests and confirms. But this directness comes with serious costs. Active scanning is noisy. The flood of unusual packets it sends looks nothing like normal network traffic, and any decent security monitoring tool will notice it immediately. This is not always a problem when the security team doing the scanning is the same team that manages the monitoring systems, but it matters greatly if stealth is required. Active scanning can also cause harm. Some older or fragile systems cannot handle being suddenly bombarded with test packets. They may slow down, malfunction, or crash entirely. For this reason, active scans on production systems, meaning live systems that real customers and real staff are using right now, are typically scheduled for quiet periods like overnight or on weekends. Most critically, active scanning without explicit written permission is illegal in most countries. Sending probing packets to a system is functionally identical to what an attacker does in the early stages of a cyber attack. The law generally does not care whether your intentions are good if you do not have permission. A security professional who scans a network they are not authorized to scan can face the same legal consequences as a criminal hacker. This is not a technicality. It is a fundamental ethical and legal boundary that every security professional must understand completely. Now, here is a truth that experienced security professionals will tell you immediately. The debate is not really about choosing passive or active scanning. The debate is about how to use both together intelligently. In a mature, well-run security program, both methods work as partners. The process usually begins with passive monitoring running continuously, like a security camera that is always recording. The passive tools build a map of everything on the network. They track which devices are present, what protocols they use, and whether any new, unrecognized devices appear. This continuous monitoring often reveals what professionals call shadow IT. Shadow IT refers to devices or services that are connected to the company network without the IT department's knowledge or approval. Perhaps an employee brought in a personal Wi-Fi router to improve their desk connection. Perhaps a new printer was installed and connected to the network without following the proper security procedures. Passive monitoring catches these invisible assets. Once that map exists, it becomes the input for targeted active scanning. Instead of firing active scan packets blindly at every possible address on the network, the security team now knows exactly which devices are present. They can schedule focused, credentialed active scans against specific, known machines during appropriate maintenance windows. This is faster, less disruptive, and more thorough. When a passive scan raises a concern, such as noticing that a server appears to be running an old version of a piece of software, a short, targeted active scan can be aimed at just that server to confirm whether the vulnerability is real and exploitable. This validation step dramatically reduces the noise and the workload of the overall security program. Once all of this scanning work is complete, the information must be communicated clearly. A vulnerability scan that produces a raw list of 10,000 potential weaknesses is not useful to anyone. It is overwhelming. The final and critical step is writing a report that turns technical data into clear, actionable guidance. A professional vulnerability assessment report has distinct layers, each written for a different audience. Understanding this is important, because a report written entirely in technical language will be ignored by the business leaders who control the budget needed to fix the problems. A report written in entirely non-technical language will not give the engineers enough information to actually do the fixing. The first layer is called the executive summary. An executive is a senior business leader, typically a person who makes financial and strategic decisions but is not a technical specialist. The executive summary is written entirely for this audience, in plain language with no technical jargon at all. It should answer three questions simply and clearly. How serious is our security situation right now? What are the biggest business risks? What resources will we need to fix things? A good executive summary might say something like, "Our customer payment database can be accessed by anyone with basic hacking knowledge." This puts the financial information of 200,000 customers at risk and exposes the company to regulatory fines of up to 5 million euros. Fixing this requires patching 3 servers, which should take 1 working day. That is clear, alarming, and actionable, and no technical knowledge is required to understand it. The second layer contains the technical details and findings. This section is written for the engineers, the system administrators, and the security analysts who will actually do the remediation work. The word remediation means the process of fixing the problems that were found. For each vulnerability discovered, This section must record several pieces of information. It must name the vulnerability clearly, for example, Apache Struts remote code execution. It must list every affected system by its network address. It must provide the CVE reference number for further research. And it must include what is called a CVSS score. CVSS stands for Common Vulnerability Scoring System. Think of it as a standardized measuring scale, like the Richter scale for earthquakes. Just as a magnitude 8 earthquake is more severe than a magnitude 4, a vulnerability with a CVSS score of 9.8 out of 10 is far more severe than one with a score of 3.2. The CVSS score is calculated by measuring things like how easy it is to exploit the vulnerability, whether the attacker needs any special access or credentials to exploit it, and how much damage would be caused if it were exploited. It gives everyone a common language for talking about severity. The third layer of the report handles risk analysis and prioritization. This is perhaps the most intellectually demanding part of the report to write, because it requires combining the technical data from the scan with knowledge of the business. Here is the key insight that separates a mediocre report from a great one. A CVSS score alone does not tell you what to fix first. Context does. Imagine two vulnerabilities. The first has a CVSS score of 9.8, which is nearly the maximum possible severity. But the system it affects is an isolated test server with no connection to the internet and no sensitive data. The second vulnerability has a CVSS score of 6.5, which is medium severity. But the system it affects is a public-facing web server that handles live customer payments and stores credit card numbers. Common sense tells you immediately which one to fix first. The 6.5 score vulnerability on the public payments server is far more dangerous to the business right now than the 9.8 score vulnerability on the isolated test server. A good report recognizes this and groups findings into actionable priority tiers. Fix this within 24 hours. Fix this within 30 days. Schedule this for the next quarterly maintenance window. The fourth layer provides remediation recommendations. The word remediation, as mentioned, means fixing the problem. This section must be specific and practical. Telling an engineer the system is vulnerable to an SQL injection attack is not useful by itself. An SQL injection attack is a type of attack where a hacker types specially crafted commands into an input box on a website, tricking the database behind the site into revealing or destroying data. A good remediation recommendation goes further. It says apply patch version 2.4.2, available from the vendor's website at this specific link. Then update the web application's input validation code to reject any input containing SQL command keywords. It provides the exact patch numbers, links to vendor advisories, and specific configuration changes needed. It gives the engineer everything they need to take immediate action. There are some ongoing debates among security professionals that are worth understanding as you develop your knowledge in this field. One debate concerns how much we should rely on automated scanning tools versus human expertise. Automated scanners are excellent at finding known vulnerabilities by comparing software versions against the CVE database. But some of the most clever attacks in history have exploited business logic flaws. A business logic flaw is a weakness not in the code itself but in the way a system's rules work. For example, imagine an online shop that offers a discount when you buy more than 5 items. A business logic flaw might allow a clever attacker to manipulate the shopping cart to claim the discount while only actually purchasing one item. An automated scanner would never find this because there is no CVE entry for it. Finding such flaws requires human creativity and deep understanding of how the business process works. This is why automated vulnerability assessment is often supplemented by manual penetration testing. Penetration testing is a process where human experts attempt to break into a system using the same techniques a real attacker would use, going beyond what any automated tool can do. Another ongoing debate concerns the standard CVSS scoring system. Critics argue that CVSS scores are static. A score is assigned to a vulnerability when it is discovered and generally does not change. But the real-world danger of a vulnerability is dynamic. It changes depending on whether attackers are currently actively exploiting it, how many organizations are vulnerable, and whether an easy-to-use attack tool has been released publicly. A new approach called the Exploit Prediction Scoring System, shortened to EPS, attempts to predict the probability that a given vulnerability will actually be exploited by attackers in the near future. This is based on real-world threat intelligence data. EPS is not yet as widely adopted as CVSS, but it represents a growing recognition that static scores alone are insufficient for smart prioritization. A third debate concerns how often scanning should happen. The traditional model involves quarterly or even annual vulnerability scans. Critics of this model point out that new vulnerabilities are discovered every single day. A system that was fully patched and clean after a quarterly scan in January might be critically vulnerable by February because of a new flaw discovered in software it runs. This has driven a movement toward what is called continuous vulnerability management. This approach uses lightweight software called agents installed directly on every machine in the organization. These agents continuously report the state of the machine to a central platform, providing near real-time visibility into the organization's security posture. The word posture here means the overall security condition of an organization at any given moment. The cost, complexity, and performance impact of running these agents on every machine is still debated, but the trend is clearly moving toward more frequent and more continuous assessment rather than periodic snapshots. Let us also briefly revisit the ethical dimension before closing. The line between a security researcher performing an authorized active scan and a criminal hacker performing illegal reconnaissance is, technically speaking, very thin. The packets sent look the same. The tools used can be identical. The single thing that separates the two is permission. Written, explicit, specific permission from the owner of the systems being scanned is the foundation of all ethical security work. This is not a bureaucratic formality. It is the bedrock of the entire profession. Without it, even the best intentions provide no legal protection and no ethical justification. Let us now bring everything together. A vulnerability assessment is the systematic process of finding, measuring, and prioritizing weaknesses in computer systems. Passive scanning listens to existing network traffic and gathers public information without touching the target systems. It is silent, safe, and ideal for sensitive environments, but it cannot confirm whether weaknesses are truly exploitable and can miss threats that are not currently generating traffic. Active scanning directly probes systems by sending test packets and comparing findings against known vulnerability databases. It produces more accurate and detailed results, but it is detectable, can potentially disrupt fragile systems, and absolutely requires written permission to be legal and ethical. The two methods are most powerful when used together, with passive monitoring providing continuous visibility and an asset map, and targeted active scanning providing deep, confirmed findings at appropriate intervals. The output of all this work is a professional report with distinct layers. The executive summary communicates business risk in plain language to decision makers. The technical findings provide detailed information for engineers. The risk analysis section uses business context to prioritize which problems to fix first, not just CVSS scores alone, and the remediation recommendations provide specific, actionable steps to actually solve each problem. The ongoing debates in this field remind us that no methodology is perfect. Automated scanning must be complemented by human expertise. CVSS scores must be interpreted with business context. And the future of the field is moving toward continuous real-time assessment rather than periodic snapshots. Understanding all of this gives you a solid foundation for thinking clearly about how organizations can systematically defend themselves in a world where new threats emerge every single day.